Number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And if you prefer email, that's fine. It's dave@petsofinancial.net. Interesting. Just, you know, I was obviously, these things roll through and you're talking, I'm talking to Kevin early in the week, and then I'm driving in and I'm hearing us talk about the markets from, not quite a week ago, but early in the week. And it's interesting because we ended up having a fascinating week, in my mind. Our week turned out to be terrible to start on Monday. And everybody's always like, oh my gosh, the Delta variant and growth, and they're going to shut everything back down. And that was the talk of the day on Monday. Remember that? I mean, it was just like constant market crunch, you know, didn't crash, but you know what I mean? Market down hundreds of points and blah, blah, blah. All because of the Delta variant and growth concerns. We are really, really concerned about growth. It's just not going to be good. And somehow, literally, like, overnight, all that went away. And of course, the financial media is just like scrambling to explain why on Monday we are so worried about growth. I mean, we're really worried about growth. Even if you weren't following the financial markets, they talked about it everywhere. Wall Street Journal comes out on Tuesday morning, right? About Monday. Oh my gosh. Everybody's worried about growth. And it's article after article after article, highlighting all of the Delta variant problems globally and what's going to happen. Incredible. We're going to shut her down again. And some places are. Nutville here, Nutville there. They just decide that's it. Like, I'm supposed to be surprised that LA County does of anything they do? These people are lunatics. They can't stop from doubling down on stupid. 12% of the population of the United States, 12% is in California. And they're so far behind everybody else as far as reopening and things like that. It's just absolutely amazing. So far behind. And yet, their job growth, which is right, you know, the further behind you are, the more you're like really getting going now, right? Because things are starting to open up. Not in California. They are opening up, but Californians are leaving California. They're leaving. And so what they do is they increase taxes more. People are leaving because there's an increase in regulation and they can't stand it anymore. So what does California do? They increase more regulations. And they make sure the electricity grid is having all kinds of problems. We have rolling blackouts because they're on top of stuff, right? They just keep doing this over and over and over again. So we shouldn't be surprised. But all of that comes about to say this. Only California. Okay, now St. Louis, right? I just heard it on the news. Not all over. But doesn't it strike you as absolutely stunningly bizarre that, like, Wall Street goes home, happy hour, you know, a couple martinis, wakes up in the morning and goes, what Delta variant? We don't care. We don't care about slow growth. We care about, I don't know. Because now the market has actually recovered the entire losses of Monday, which was horrific, and all that, just ask the media. It was an unbelievable thing. And it just keeps rolling back until by Friday. We're at 35,000 on the Dow, first time ever, meaning, of course, all-time highs in the market by Friday. And, of course, everybody on the financial desks is scrambling for an explanation, right? We got to scramble for it. What really happened here? How come all of a sudden everybody is, like, happy and doing a happy dance and we're at all-time highs when we were just screaming and yelling yesterday about how slow everything was going to be? Unbelievable. I was just like dumbfounded that we have to explain every single movement in the market. Constant noise, constant fear, constant worrying. And we talk about it all the time. Again, go to our website. We've got a video there. It's only about 12 minutes to try to explain why equity indexed annuities won't work, can't work, don't work. I got pretty fired up last week, and I'm not going to do that again. But they don't work, period. But we're sold when we live in fear, because all we're worried about is losses. And if we only define losses as one thing, one simple thing, temporary price decline. That's loss. That's it. That's it. That's it. That's the risk. I can't stand that. Okay. So what we could do is make sure we don't have enough money to keep up with inflation and enough income to live out our lives. See, that to me is the risk, right? Not temporarily my Pfizer stock goes down. But fear sells. So you see, we have this constant noise in a world that is way too noisy anyway, way too busy. And we choose not, as human beings, to dial back these problems. We all acknowledge that other people across the room that are on their phones like you and I are, they have a problem. They have a social media problem. They're too plugged in. They're too concerned about how they look, how they appear to be to their friends, how many clicks they're getting, how many happy smiley faces or whatever we get. They're too worried. I'm not. I'm not too getting only data I already agree with. And I call it news. You know, like I'm really informed because I know more stuff about what I already agree with. Yeah, that's, man, I'm just blowing my brains out there, expanding the brain knowledge, aren't I? I'm not. I'm becoming even dumber. I'm dumbing myself down. Without being careful, we do that. And we follow that noise. And we keep thinking that there's an explanation every day why markets do what they do. And we think we ought to be reacting to that. Constant worry, constant noise equals bad decisions. I mean, the Dow's at 35,000. When I started in the industry, it was at 800. That doesn't even include dividends, by the way. It's an astounding growth. But if you listen to the daily noise, you question it. You wonder if, isn't it too high now? Isn't it too much? Shouldn't we be stepping aside, taking a few chips off the table, getting out? Didn't you see how much debt there's going to be? Blah, 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 blah. Constant. So the real question is, when you're looking at it and you're sure that you can handle all that, because I'm pretty sure I got it. I'm not swayed by constant battering. I'm not swayed because I only want fed the news that I want to feed myself, because I can dial in and I don't have to listen to somebody with an opposing viewpoint. So I can become an expert on my own thoughts. Isn't that smart? Isn't that great? I wouldn't really think that's wise, but okay. I think I've got it handled. But experience is what keeps me always in the market. And I hear it every day, though. I mean, literally every single day. Dave, don't you think, fill in the blank, stocks are too high, da-da-da-da-da-da, on and on. Aren't you worried about, aren't we at a little bit high? What do you really think the market's going to do? Go up after it has multiple market corrections, go to all-time highs, like it has my whole life, my dad's life, my grandparents' life. And so on. There's not a person alive that hasn't seen market corrections. No adult, anyway. No one over the age of, like, two. And hasn't seen all-time highs constantly. More wealth, more abundance, more prosperity, more choices. But we sit and we just go, oh, I don't know. We're worried about the Delta variant. And then we don't even question this noise as we go to all-time highs within days. On what news? I don't know. Just a minute. Let me look. I got to talk to some traders. Hello, traders. Tell me. Make something up. Oh, it's oil prices. Okay. It's earnings. Okay, so it's earnings. We're getting good earnings. We are getting good earnings last week, but we weren't worried about the Delta variant. And then we weren't worried about the Delta variant within hours of that was the panic thing. It makes no sense. And then we do this, and we do this over and over and over and over again. We listen to the noise. We let it infect us. We let it ooze through our system so we can worry some more. Isn't the market too high? I don't know. We shouldn't be in that, right? What about tech stocks? What about this? What if that happens? What about they're printing money? What should we be in? What do you think we ought to do? What about gold? What about those equity index? Can we get part of that? I'm a little scared. This is what we do, and it pulls us away from what we ought to be doing. And we do it thinking that we're doing the right thing, listening, grinding on it. Pull away. We saw this in real time this week. Learn. Don't listen. Turn the noise down. We have to. You can't behave well. You can't. You just can't. It's financial pornography, and you're just pouring it into yourself to help you make financial decisions. Bad choice. All right, I got to take a quick break, and then we're going to grab some calls on the other side. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That is our number. If you prefer email, that's fine. It's dave@petsofinancial.net. Let's go to the phones. Jim, thank you for calling. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dave. How's it going?
Good.
I just got to tell you a couple of stocks I bought on the bit of a dip Monday.
Okay.
Anyway, I guess maybe previously, maybe on Friday or Thursday, I'm looking at my statement on the internet, and I discovered $10,000 in the cash that wasn't there before. So seems that a bond came due because the interest rates are so low.
Mm-hmm.
So I called my advisor, you know, what to do. She says, well, I think I've got some ideas. Well, anyway, come Monday, and I call her, and I tell her I have an idea, and I hear her say under her breath, oh, no. I mean, she knows I'm kind of off the wall. Well, a while back, I had gotten into buying a bank in Canada. So I investigated Bank of Montreal, Toronto, Dominion Bank, Royal Bank of Canada. I finally got 100 shares of Bank of Nova Scotia. So this time, I'm thinking, well, maybe someplace else, but maybe in the United Kingdom. So anyway, I tell her I have investigated National Australia Bank. So I bought 400 shares of National Australia Bank, and her idea was Citibank. And so I'm telling her Citibank is so mundane, it's so establishment, you know, so boring. But anyway, so I told her, well, I'll make us both happy, and National Australia Bank is a little bit less than $10 a share. And so I got 400 shares of National Australia Bank and 100 shares of Citibank. And then, of course, the very next day, they're now profitable. So.
Mm-hmm. It's a big turnaround. It most certainly was. Okay, so you bring up a quick question, though, or concern, and that's with ADR fees. Be careful of that you own enough to offset the fees that they charge every year, and some companies charge a lot more than others. So when you're buying foreign stocks in America, there's an additional fee to own them, to hold them. It's an annual fee that comes out. So
I have not run into those.
I think if you look closely, you will see that. And so I would ask, next time, ask your advisor, because I doubt very much that the Edward Jones is going to be eating that for you, okay?
Well, this isn't Edward. This is Raymond James.
Well, either way, I'm sorry. I wasn't meaning to pick on any of them. I'm just saying just check on it, okay? Because on the couple stocks I have, to even TD, which, you know, TD Schwab, they charge. So
how do they charge then?
Once per year, there's an annual fee on all ADRs, okay?
Is that hidden there?
It's not hidden. It's expressed on your statement. Look for it.
I've never gotten that, so.
Yeah, it's not like you're getting a bill. It's just going to be a little line item you know, mixed up with your dividends and things like that. It's not usually a large fee, right? It's not large, but holding a stock, if you are going to be continuing to have a fee on it, you should understand it. That's all.
Yeah, I just thought that was in mutual funds, but I'll have to ask her, but I have not seen anything like that.
Yeah, check it out. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks for your call.
We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. And let's go to a different Jim, as it says on my screen. Hello, Jim.
Hi. You were talking about record highs in the stock market,
mm-hmm.
and that you started out when it was 800. And I'm assuming that must have been around, you know, when the first crash happened, that one-day crash.
No, it was 1980, right after the, when interest rates were like 20%. Yeah.
Okay.
I've been doing this for 40 years. I know it sounds ridiculous, but that's true. Yeah, it's when I started.
My observation has been that these record highs are just following record high inflation. There doesn't seem to be any growth in business. In fact, you know, this just seems to be correcting itself. So, you know, once you take your money and invest it in something, and that same money is inflated or devalued by printing presses or electronic, digital, whatever, mm-hmm. this fiat currency, it's basically losing value rapidly, and so the stocks just adjust to correct for inflation. Isn't that the case?
No, not at all. I tell you what, because we're not going to have enough time before this, but I'll tell you what, you brought up some great points. So what I want to do is at the beginning of the hour, I hope you'll be around for our second hour, I'll give you a little bit of history of that right after our news at the top of the hour, but go ahead.
Okay, well, see, to me, this is what I see. If not all of it, of course, but it's certainly playing a factor, isn't it?
Well, inflation always does, and you're always going to hear us talk about what the after-tax returns are, or I'm sorry, after-inflation returns are. Those are called the real returns. It's like real GDP. GDP growth is after inflation, right, is taken out of it. That's the only real dollars there are. So when we talk about that, it's a very important point. It's the only point. It's one of the reasons people invest in stocks, in equities, because those companies can and do raise their dividends over the years ahead at a faster rate than inflation. So, Jim, I hope you're around. We're going to talk a little bit more about this in 5 minutes, okay? And, Jeff, would you hang on? We'll likely grab you about 10 after. If you don't want to do that, well, Jeff, call us back, and we'll put you right up on top, okay? So we appreciate your call. We'll be right back after Fox News, top of the hour. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. These crazy computers, I'll tell you, it's a mess. It's a mess. It's a mess sometimes. Beauty of live radio. Okay, these are my opinions and my opinions only, although they ought to be your opinions. Haha. We are here not to tell you what to buy, and sell. That's crazy. That's wrong. And I just have to say it all the time because it's not what the media does. They don't want you to think deeply about things. They want you to trade on emotion. They want you to be sucked into their world and click their views and all that stuff. We're not here to do that. It doesn't work. Buying and holding great corporations, creative destruction, even ones in your portfolio that go to zero or that don't work. It doesn't take a whole lot of Apple 30-fold increases since the iPhone came out to do really well. But how many times in the past 12 years since the iPhone came out have people told you Apple can't do it again? They can't do this. They can't do that. The new phone is this. It's too expensive. Wait, Samsung's way better. Blah, 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 blah. Plenty of opportunities to get out. Always are. How many people are telling you all the time you need to get out? You don't want to be in that Wall Street casino. And we get fearful and buy into promises that we know aren't true. They aren't true. So great question, Jim. I want to go ahead and try to answer that best I can in a couple different ways. And, you know, I think we'll come back to some of these basic things. I was like quickly digging through material and trying to find some different things. But the one that struck me the most, okay, now this is a little old, so it's 2014. We all know that the market's up a lot since 2014. But it measured the last 200 years of the market up till 2014 and inflation. Because as we were talking about it, it doesn't matter how many dollars you have. It's what they'll buy that counts. So the main assets are stocks, bonds, and gold. And how have they done for the past 200 years? Now, we know it's done even better because since 2014, we all know, that the market has gone up a lot since 2014. So this is so yesterday, so much higher numbers, but that's all right because you will not believe this. And you probably choose not to. I'm not picking on you personally. I'm saying that people think that inflation has been the big thing that's torn everything down or the only reason things go up for the 40 years I've been in the business. The Dow was at 800. And it's funny, I found this on a separate bullet point, interestingly, in 1980. And gold was at 800 in 1980. And if I could, I know this sounds like a plug to go to YouTube under Petso Financial, but I think the charts and stuff there, Jim, are going to be unbelievably good for you. Look for Dow 30,000. We did a YouTube video about that, and why did I pick that Dow 30,000, and why did I pick from 1980? Because that's when I started in the industry. And we just walked from 1980 through all the reasons why you shouldn't invest in stocks, what the value was compared to inflation and everything else. It's all there, and it's like, I don't know, 10 minutes? It's pretty short. Anyway, maybe it's a little longer, but I think you'll like that a lot. Go to YouTube, Petso Financial. You'll find it. It's called Dow 30,000. Ironically, yesterday we hit Dow 35,000. Isn't that great? So it wasn't that long ago we did this. It's pretty fresh data. But it has all of that in there, okay? What the Dow did with dividends reinvested, all those things, okay? Now, here it is. What has $10,000 grown to in the last 200 years up to July of 2014? Okay, so again, we all know that this is even higher. So for gold, every $10,000 is worth $26,000 in 200 years. Okay, so gold after inflation has gone up a little bit. Okay, these are net figures of inflation, okay? $10,000 invested in bonds after inflation for 200 years is worth $8 million. $8 million. Huge, absolutely huge gains. Bonds, believe it or not, and this is not true today, you've heard me say it many times, bonds are not going to be a good investment right now, not after inflation. Inflation's running higher than a 10-year treasury. It makes no sense. I'm going to tie up my money for 10 years at 1.3% in a 3% plus inflationary environment, guaranteeing that in 10 years I will get back a lot less than I put in, and the interest I'm receiving each year is not even equal to the inflation rate, and I can pay taxes on that interest as well. Swell deal. But historically, bonds do yield a little bit more at $8 million over the last 200 years. And yes, I can hear people saying it too, right? So I might as well say it because I know statistics lie, liars use statistics, okay? That's been true for the last 10 years, 5 years, 20 years, 50 years, any period of time you're talking about. Stocks, $10,000 invested in stocks 200 years ago is $5.6 billion after inflation. $5.6 billion. We could buy gold and have $26,000. We could buy stocks and have $5.6 billion. And I know, I can hear it again. Well, he's going to live 200 years, blah, blah, blah. Okay, this is the same story that's been true for the last 5 years, 13 and a half years, 17.6 years, 23.2 years, et cetera, on and on. All long-term periods of time, stocks outperform. All long-term periods of time. Outperform inflation, gold, bonds, everything. But people don't because they don't behave. They don't own great corporations. They trade them. Like, if you will, tickets at a horse race. I'm going to make a short-term bet, a two-minute bet on Apple. On whoever. They don't see it as long-term investing. This is only if you hold it. Okay, but that's as long period as we, you know, I just think the longer we look, the more clarity we have. And the numbers are just unbelievable. It just doesn't matter if it was the good old days, the bad old now, the social media days now, or it was World War II, pre-World War II, during the Depression, after the Depression, before the Depression, all of those times, which is why those of us who believe in freedom and believe in this country recognize that capitalism, creative destruction, is the most freeing, powerful economic engine that there is. Everything else is made up noise. And that noise is to take money from your pocket and put it into the scaremonger's pocket. Fear sells. Always has. When I started in 1980, gold was the thing. The budget deficits were horrifying, frightening, scary, and were going to take us down. Then gold disappeared from anybody's who, you know, who cares about gold? It's a pretty brick. Good Lord, it's nothing. It's not even an asset. I don't even know why it's an asset. It's a brick. Can't become more productive. Doesn't earn a dime of interest. It sits. Does nothing. Nothing. But it was a focal point forever. And now we should be chasing a Bitcoin or a whatever. It doesn't. Fear sells. Fear sells. All right, let's go to Jeff. Jeff, thank you for patiently waiting. Go ahead, please.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for taking my call this morning. Mm-hmm. Dave, I'm still in the accumulating cycle of my investment life. But I'm closely approaching the time when I would be distributing the funds from my, or the money from my government 401k. And the question I have for you this morning is the safe withdrawal rate. Mm. And the number that's usually thrown around is 4%. I'm curious what your opinion is of that 4% withdrawal rate.
What a great question. Jeff, this is a huge question, so I'm going to do my best in a few minutes to tear it down a little bit. But this gets back to proper retirement planning and how to do it. It's tricky, right? Because you've got money and investments that go up and down in value, but you're pulling money out. That's the dangerous part, right? Because when it's down and you're pulling out, that's a death spiral, right? Because you're, you know, it's down in value. Now you're selling even more shares to get your income out. And that takes it down lower. So even if your long-term returns are higher, you're still running out of money, right? Because you're selling
That's so correct.
Much when it's down. It's really the distribution of returns rather than the average return that matters, okay? I can promise you 10% the rest of your life on average. I've told you nothing about what your safe withdrawal rate is. That's a really, really hard concept for human brain. It really is. We have learned a long time ago that what a 10% market return looks like is this nice slope that kind of, you know, bends and goes, right, as interest compounds, which is the eighth wonder of the world. But it is something that we don't think about is that 10% is comprised of minus 25, plus 20, plus 23, 35, 6, 2, 1, never 10. Right? It never does 10. It does all these other things to average that time. But if your distribution is a lot of negatives early on, your pile will shrink as you're making withdrawals, and you don't have enough to come back when the market averages 10. So that's a hard concept. Let's start with why that this is not, there's no really fixed number. Number one. Number two, the 4% withdrawal rate has been broken for a long time. Now, let's think about the Monte Carlo simulations that you've run, because you can run them on our website. You can run it at Vanguard. You can run it anywhere. Open up Google and say, you know, 4% withdrawal rate. And there it is. It'll be right there. It's all run by the same engines. And if I have garbage in, I'm going to get garbage out. I don't care how many billion calculations I run. This is what I call just stopping and asking yourself the logical questions in the world. If I were to have a 60-40 portfolio, which is what they recommend, right? 60% yeah. stocks, 40% bonds, right? So what is the yeah. interest rate on bonds? I'm not even going to predict what the stocks will do. Just tell me what I'm going to earn on bonds, because that's an easy one. We can go right to the 10-year treasury, which is yielding how much? Do you know?
No, I don't.
1.3%. 1.3. So what they're going to tell me is I should put, now let's pretend it's a little higher. It's 2, but it's not. But let's say it's 2. Just because it's low right now, what about like next year? It's at 2. So I'm going to put 40% of my portfolio at 2%. And remember, the 4% withdrawal rate is also going to protect me against inflation, right? Because, and let's say that's 3%. How am I going to take out 4 by having 40% of my portfolio earning 2 and keeping up with inflation? I don't think you need to run a spreadsheet to say that won't work, period. So the asset allocation formula that all of these are using is broken. The data is wrong, because we are at 1.3% on a bond. You cannot be buying bonds, not in any bulk, and put them in a portfolio and do the happy dance because you don't have to worry anymore, because they've told you what the safe withdrawal rate is. Stocks would have to do like 20% a year to make up for that. And I, Jeff, I don't make market predictions, as you probably know, of listening to the show at all. We don't have to say there's no flipping way it's going to do 20% a year the rest of your life.
Do you ever have clients that are in retirement? And do you ever find yourself recommending that they pause distribution because the markets just aren't doing that great, and just wait till they return back to a better rate?
Yeah, great question. The answer is no. What we do, what we have done when you go through very difficult times, the last one was 2008. This last bear market was so fast, and then we got back into a bull market so fast, it didn't matter, because you're always going to have cash in a portfolio. So let me tell you what I would recommend, or what we're doing today, to try to distribute anywhere between 3 and 5% income to clients. They don't own bonds. We're doing everything we can to generate yield. Yes, that's going to be almost 100% or in equities, and or it will be equities-based. Volatility is not our concern. Our concern is running out of money, cost of living adjusted, before you're dead. That's our problem, not is my account down this month. We mix that up in our brains. But if we cannot do it by using an asset class, and that's obvious to a three-year-old, you cannot put 1.6%, 1.3%, 2% bonds, whatever they are, into a portfolio in any size, and it will work pulling out 3, 4, 5%. It won't work. And so we're trying to do different things with real estate, all these other things, creating pockets of money. Some of them are structured notes even. Now, that's getting complicated, but I'm just saying you have to be creative, not making market predictions, but being creative in a world that is in a zero interest rate environment. And whatever the environment is 10 years from now, we've got to be creative in that environment too. To sit there and be static and pretend the world is not changing is only what they do at large companies, whether it's a J.P. Morgan or whoever, and they sit around, they have to be institutionalized because everybody has to talk the same talk because they've got 10,000 employees and they've got millions of clients. We cannot be allowing somebody to have their own thought. They can't. So they have to be institutionalized. And besides, that's what I was taught when I went and I got my master's degree in finance. Goodness gracious, I can't change my mind now. And so these are the people that are stuck in that world. But I will tell you that the J.P. Morgans of the world, you know, the big financial companies are all saying, look, modern portfolio theory is broken. It's broken. We don't have the answer, but it is broken. You cannot put a bunch of money in bonds that don't earn anything and tell people that all your Monte Carlo simulations show it'll work. It won't work. So we're having to be more creative with generating income from real estate, tradable real estate called REITs, real estate investment trusts, things like that, where you pull a portfolio together to generate enough yield that you can make that work. And even owning stocks that don't have yield. Google's and the Internet of Things and all the technology, robotics, artificial intelligence, genetics, even retirees' income portfolios should have some of that because that's where the world's going. But what you have to do then is you have to have the courage and the ability to go ahead and sell them off when they're doing really well, or sell part of them, sell some of the profits, take it, put it in their reservoir for cash so you have money for six months from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. That's the plan. It's not just what it's generating today, but in the future. Now, when you have a long and sustained downturn, if people have the ability to take less, it always adds more conservative nature to your portfolio. Taking money out when markets are in a downturn is bad, but you have to plan for it because bear markets are inevitable. Bad markets are inevitable. Great markets going to all-time highs, that's inevitable. It all feeds together. So ride the cycles up. We harvest gains. You move it over so that the inevitable bad markets you can sustain through. So the answer is you can do that, and you have to do that if you're taking excess out, okay? But that way you can have a flexibility in your retirement that matches your personality and your needs. Make any sense at all?
Well, it looks like in my retired life, I would need more diversity in the portfolio than I presently have. Where I have it now, mm-hmm. the expenses are very cheap, but what's available is limited.
It's very limited. So, you will have to roll it over to an IRA. There's no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. Jeff, I have to roll. I'm against a break here. I apologize.
Well, thank you for your comments mm-hmm. and insight.
You're very welcome, and I thank you for your. It's a very, very important question. To 1 million people per, I think per month is what it is. 1 million people a month, baby boomers are retiring. So it's a big number. Mm-hmm. Have a great
yes,
day, Jeff. Thank you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. We got to take a quick break. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436-580-KIDO. That is our number. Let's go to Mark. Mark, thank you for waiting. Go ahead, please.
Did I hear you correctly? And when you said you don't put people in bonds at all?
Very little. That's correct. Yep. Very, very little. There always are going to be some bonds in, say, an income mutual fund we would use, right? And or if somebody has a very, very short-term need for some cash, we may have a little bit in there. But when you're talking about interest rates right now on short-duration funds that are around 0.25, really there's no point. There's no point.
But
go ahead.
But the low interest rates arguably is what's contributing to a massive asset bubble.
I think the biggest asset bubble we have. I don't disagree with that. It could be, but I don't think you're going to find safety in bonds. I'm not saying there aren't opportunities. We have literally still have tens of millions of dollars sitting in tax-free municipal bonds. What I am saying though is that. Are we using them as for brand new money today? The answer is no. And this is an opportunity, in our opinion, that comes and goes. We'll use it in the closed-end space, and I'm just saying that there are times we use it, and we'll use some. We won't use it for all accounts, for sure. But by and large, I'd have to say that the actual amount of bonds that we have is near zero, even in our income portfolios. And the reason for that is because interest rates at 1.3 are not going to give us an income in the 4% range. It guarantees failure. I don't think that's being safe if we are guaranteeing failure. That's not safe.
But if you buy an inflated equity or an inflated income property and it goes negative, isn't that better than negative? I'm not suggesting 100%, but you can't. Mm-hmm. Arguably, we are in a massive asset bubble right now, specifically because of low interest rates not being a viable alternative for a return.
Correct.
So people are
But I don't disagree at all. But to me, I look at it as simply this way. Okay, I look at it and there's basically three asset classes. I mean, people can talk about gold or something else, but the reality is liquid assets. Okay, and we are using a good amount of real estate, so I'm not dissing real estate at all. Commercial real estate has the characteristics exactly of what you're looking for. Commercial, I said carefully, okay, not residential, has exactly the characteristics you're looking for to protect against inflation, which I believe we are in a growing inflationary environment. So I want that kind of protection. So I'm not dissing that, but it is an illiquid area. And yes, you can buy publicly traded REITs, and we do that. But I don't want to go down that road. I want to talk about cash, bonds, and stocks right now, because that's where really all money goes if you're talking about institutional money moving around in this giant bathtub. Now, we have cash, and we have literally tens of trillions of dollars. There's $13 trillion at negative interest rates right now in the world. That's not attractive. That won't work, and it guarantees failure. And so I would say cash is in an asset bubble. It has infinity, if we use the earnings model suggested by the Federal Reserve, and or call it price-to-earnings ratio or whatever, we have infinity on cash. It earns zero, and so it has a P.E. ratio of infinity. We could also go to then bonds, and it's at 1.3%. Let's use easy numbers and pretend we got back to 2%, which we were 6 months ago, right? So we're at 2%. We have a 50 times earnings P.E. on bonds. I would argue that that's far higher than the 20 P.E. That we have on stocks. And that's basically, and they're able to continue to grow earnings. So what I'm saying is the asset bubble to me is in cash. It's fear. There's so much money sitting in cash that the asset bubble's in cash and in bonds, not in stocks.
Well, I think the amount of cash on the sidelines is a rationalization for people to continue to inflate the bubble that we're in. And when people start saying that this time is different, that's a sign for me that it's not different.
Yeah. Well, I like what John Templeton said, okay? And I think he's one of the wisest investors, if not the wisest ever. But he always had a generational perspective of things. And John Templeton said the most dangerous words in investing were, this time it's different, okay? He also said, equally as often, it's always different. Because there's different people, there's different technology, there is different things about the world that we need to understand. There's different industries that are growing. Some are shrinking. You can't always look at it the same way. And I think about that two tenuous things. It's like when somebody reads one scripture out of the Bible, and then everybody goes, well, that doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound loving and kind or whatever, right? We have to have both, right? You should be behaving this way, but people aren't perfect. All those things are tenuous. We don't have a definitive answer. Like when P.E. ratios are high, the Shiller Index, I just scream how many times I've heard it screaming at us that you got to be out of the Dow from 15,000 points on. It's too high. It's always the things are shifting and we have to move with it. It doesn't mean we have to be predictive. We just have to simply sometimes look at the ground conditions. That's all I'm saying about an income portfolio. You don't sit around here and say, okay, I'm just going to be in the S&P 500. That will not work. But I also can't say I want 40% in an investment that guarantees failure. That's not it either. So I want that mix, and I want to be hunting and pecking and looking. Can we do some stuff with structured notes? Can we do some stuff with real estate to get that yield up so that the retirees can draw their 4% and not run out of money? And that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying, not arguing whether one thing's over another. I just say that there's no way I'm going to put a bunch of money in bonds just because that's what I grew up on when I know they won't work. I hope that makes some sense, Mark, and I'm sorry because this has been fascinating. Please call back again, but I've got to run to Fox News. So thank you again for your call. And our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net, and we'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436-580-KIDO. That is our number. If you prefer email, it's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Let's go to the phones. Terry, thank you for calling. Go ahead, please. Hello, hello.
We got some music in the background here.
Okay, gotcha. Go ahead, Terry. What's going on? Terry, are you there?
Hello?
Hello, Terry.
Hey, that was fun.
Okay, you got it? Oh, we got you now. Go ahead there.
Well, I promise not to ask you a Kevin Miller gotcha question.
All right.
But have you set out anything for outreach to schools, like handouts for your YouTube videos, flyers, bulletin board posters, things like that?
Here's what I'm hoping to do, and I've been hoping this for 20 years, right?
Well, hope in one hand and, well, never mind that.
No, I get it. But let me tell you what, okay? I was hopeful that NNU they have a phenomenal finance department and some great professors out there. And I was always hoping we could collaborate. And we talked about it at one point, collaborating on doing some videos. And you know, because they had the studio set up, they had all that stuff, that we could do some stuff and make it available to any public school, free of charge, anywhere. And we were all excited about it. Nothing really happened, okay? And it's something that, honestly, Terry, I can't really, don't have the time, can't carry the ball all by myself. But guess what? Technology's doing. Technology now allows us, as you just pointed out, to talk about stuff on YouTube and to educate. And so in our office, we are continuing to work on different videos, many of which are going to be targeting young people and targeting an understanding of markets. And when I say young people, I actually mean really young thinkers, young brains, people that don't decide that they really know what life is about, what markets are. People that want to know what a stock is, because, you know, most people, most adults of any age don't really know what stock is. They don't know that it's ownership in a corporation. They don't know the difference between a stock and a bond. They don't know what mutual funds are or what the difference between an ETF and a mutual fund is. They don't know any of that. They don't understand that dividends go up every year collectively over time. Not every single year, but most years. And over time, consistently. They don't understand all that and how easy it is to be an investor day in and day out. They don't understand the eighth wonder of the world, compound interest. We want to try to bring that to, you know, if you will, 10-minute snippets, maybe five, because we want to capture the young brain's attention span and get something planted in there. And then hopefully with their parents, they can kind of walk to the next step and the next step. So we're hoping to do that. And it really is a long-term dream of mine to try to empower that. And now I think we've got that with technology. Anybody can do it, right? If people can become famous because, I don't know, for, you know, whatever it is, because they can blow water out of their nose or something and it'll go viral, why can't we make it available for people that really do want their kids to have an economic education and give them the financial, you know, ability to work? Why can't we do that? And if people don't do it, don't take it, or we do a bad job of it, so be it. But it's out there, and then people can grab it maybe and do a better job and,
you know,
run with it.
I look at my young soldier down in San Antonio right now, and he's flush with money. He's not spending a dime. His wife is not spending a dime, and they're putting it all in the bank. And I remember back to the day 15 years ago or so, and I asked him what his budget was for his allowance. And now he's got, you know, boom, here's what we're allowed, here's what your budget is for his wife's spending, and it just set up just set up his good habits.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you, like I said, I'm thinking old school stuff, like, you know, YouTube's cool, but yet you got to get the YouTube to him first, so say a bulletin board flyer or a poster or something to say, hey, listen, here's some information on how you start.
Yes, and I think that that's, the, you know, what we're trying to do with YouTube, it's great because on YouTube, what you can do is you can show a chart, right?
Yeah.
You can use an example. You can even use a whiteboard on there. I want to show you something, you know. I saw a powerful video the other day. Was nothing more than a TED Talk, and the guy had a whiteboard, right? Very powerful. I've watched it three times. Our office has watched it because it asks incredible questions, and it's actually like 10 years old, right? It's not brand new. It was just a guy with a whiteboard talking about stuff that he was an expert on. So, but the reason it was so effective, right, is because he could draw a couple squiggles on the board and make a point better than the words. But that he couldn't rely on the chart without the words. So we're learning in multiple capacities. And I am a better auditory learner by far than I am visual. But visual aids always help everybody to make some points.
Yeah.
But for me, I hear the word better. And my point of saying that is not anything about me. It's understanding that people learn differently. Some learn with their hearts better, with their raw emotions, but most people learn visually better than they do auditory. But some, like me, are auditory. But they all, you know, we all learn some stuff, and if we don't feel it, nobody learns anything. And you can't change a mind without feeling it.
And all those young minds are just waiting to be, you know, just sponges waiting to have an idea dropped on them and then watch it bloom later on down the road.
Yeah, you know, it's like you know, we know this. We all know this from this woke culture. People walk around making statements that aren't actually even true, but they feel that, and people feel that passion of the injustice or whatever it is they're talking about. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to be so woke that we have males running against females in the Olympics. That's not sensible on any level. Nobody would think that makes sense.
Now we go back to Woodrow Wilson and Edward Bernays, and Bernays making breakfast the most important meal of the day. It's propaganda.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, once you grab the emotion, you've got them. So that again, that's the big part, is flooding the zone, I guess, with the first step information. Here's where you find a video to go figure out how to make your budget work.
Yep, exactly. And I just think there's going to be a pile of that coming. I do. I really do. It may not even be us. Maybe there's more out there than I know of, but I don't know of them out there now. And it's all going to be free, and that's the cool thing about it. So there's nothing there that we can't do in a very meaningful way, especially the big companies out there that have just enormous budgets. They've got their own cameras and studios and ability to make all kinds of graphics. You know, all of them do, whether it's, you know, an American Funds, a Franklin, all of them have all those great studios.
I've been having fun lately here with that darn fancy smartphone, but looking at a thing called Odyssey, O-D-Y-S-E-E, which is just a compilation of videos from, imagine what's out there, and it's there.
Yeah.
And I watched one last night on just how to start first off in Bitcoin or in cryptocurrencies.
Mm-hmm.
And this young lady just did this excellent 7-minute presentation. And it made a lot of stuff that I'd been asking questions about just crystal clear. And the thing is, I get a piece of crypto for watching it, and she gets a piece of crypto for every view that she has. And now you turn that back into people making quote unquote money or something they find of value, or they can take that cryptocurrency and trade it for something else and move it on down for more information. It's just the world is running faster than my pea brain can catch up with, but it sure is a fun ride.
It is a fun ride, and I think that's the attitude we have to carry forward. Terry, thank you for your call, and you have a great rest of the day.
You're welcome, sir. Shoot them well and stay hydrated.
Okay, we'll do. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO, dave@petzofinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. If you have any comments or questions during the week, you would like us to, you know, talk about something, or just catch up on some of our videos, our Zoom meetings, things like that, you can go to petzofinancial.com. Lots of articles and calculators to help you with your financial planning as well. But leave us a message. Let us know what you want us to talk about, okay? All right, before we get to the phone, I've got Fred has sent in a note here. Buying less than 100 shares. Dave, I have the opportunity to buy shares of stocks in small amounts, 15 shares, 17 shares, et cetera, right? One share, right? This allows a regular investment of money in stocks that I am interested in, like the Googles of the world. On the other hand, sometimes companies will force a sale of less than le- of less than multiples of 100 shares, and you can end up with an unwanted capital gains for taxes. Any advice? Fred, that doesn't happen very often, so I just wouldn't worry about it. They can and they do, but most of the time that happens in an event of a merger. And now we can even go and get into fractional shares. That's coming to all of Wall Street soon. But companies like Robinhood even allow fractional shares now. It's so yesterday, right? So you can put $10 in and you can start buying Google. You can, you know, whatever, small percentage of one share of Google if that's what you choose to do. I wouldn't worry about the days of 100 shares are pretty much gone. It's usually when 100 shares are forced out, it's in some kind of a buyout, buyback, those kinds of things. Or the way I've usually seen it is those are favored in a liquidation, right? Meaning we are only going to buy back in some kind of a Dutch auction type of thing. I'm not trying to get in the weeds here. Just follow me here. We are going to favor any lots under 100 shares, right? So they will allow all of those to go first, and then whatever percentages they're left in some, you know, multi-million dollar buyout, then everybody gets a percentage allocation from there. That's where I usually see it. So I just don't think it would be, I would worry about it. Use that as an advantage to, you know, if you will, buy your small stock positions, and I wouldn't worry about the capital gains, okay? And if it really is a concern for you, then of course you can always do that inside of an IRA, and then you don't have capital gains issues. But outside of the IRA, I guess I just wouldn't worry about it. I've just not seen that very often. Good question. Thanks, Fred. Keep them coming. And that's Petso. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Let's go to Pat. Pat, thank you for holding. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dave. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I have a question. I don't know if you've been asked this before, but you hear that other gentleman on the radio on Saturdays and Sundays, SaveMoney.com, but he never takes phone calls with people asking questions. So I just wanted your opinion on what you think about that. He says when the stock market goes up, you make money. When the stock market goes down, you never lose money.
Right, right. Well, I'll keep it brief. It's frustrating to me. I've gone to the state of Idaho Department of Insurance to talk about different marketing things, and they've tightened up the rules. They have. And so that's a start. It's not what I'd like to see, but I'm not the king. And so I don't get to decide all of that stuff. But I do feel like the Department of Insurance is trying to address it better. But let me say it this way. We have the information on our website, PetsoFinancial.com. You can go there for a 12-minute dissertation on why equity indexed annuities, which is what this is, don't work. It's a very short, it's not going to give you all in the weeds, but it'll give you a pause to say, I need more information, which we're happy to provide. But I can't keep people's attention for 40 minutes talking about the ins and outs of annuities, okay? But they don't work because of the things called caps. But there are, the bottom line is this, okay? I don't want to get wound up about this, and we don't have time for it today. But this is something that is a very big concern for those of us in the industry who have licensing requirements, fiduciary responsibilities. We have legal responsibility to be fully transparent. We are required by law. But when they talk about no fees and things like that, that's just not true. The commissions are very high. They're 7 to 10% commissions that come out up front. That means the product won't work. And when they say they have market participation, I will just tell you this and why I got so fired up last week. It's right here on my lap, so anybody wants a copy of it can have it. But we just had somebody come in, and you know the market went up 17% last year. That's just a fact. That's what the S&P did. And this is theoretically tied to the S&P. So up 17%, this lady's old lady, of course, because it's always old people, this old lady's annuity went up 0.7. Not 7. 0.7, less than 1% in an up 17 year, and somehow legally people are allowed to say this has market participation with no risk. That didn't even earn 1% in an up 17 year. This is not an accident. It's built into the product that it cannot work. So it is terrible, horrible, awful. It makes me sick, and you can hear me getting excited again, and I don't want to do that, Pat. And besides, we're about out of time. But thank you.
Right.
Do your homework, okay? Thank you very much. I got to go, everybody.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend. Bye-bye. Did I do better, Kevin?